So also in the middle ground, we have sort of the no warranty concept. You may have heard reference to no warranty deeds. Again, this is another instance where the label fails to tell the whole story. That could refer to a deed that is silent as to warranty, and in that case, you might have implied or statutory warranties that do take effect. Or it might, the no warranty deed might have a disclaimer of warranties, which obviously would negate those implied or statutory warranties. And then finally, we have the quitclaim. That passes any title, interest, or claim of the grantor in property. It does not profess that title, interest, or claim is valid. And that's really the primary distinction between a quitclaim and everything else, is that the quitclaim does not purport to convey some definite interest. So, having reviewed the title warranties in their various forms, what is the relationship between a title warranty and the PSA? Usually, title issues are confined to the PSA's defect procedures prior to close. And that can mean purchase price reductions when defects are properly and timely asserted. That can sometimes mean a right to cure, and sometimes means exclusion of properties affected or associated with an asserted defect. The sellers often insist that certain issues will count as permitted encumbrances. They won't qualify as defects for which there will be any kind of recourse under the PSA. Some items are natural candidates for permitted encumbrances because they're to be expected in just about any transaction. There can be a variety of liens. Think mechanics liens, tax liens, liens arising under operating agreements. And as long as those are to be expected, and as long as those don't secure obligations that are delinquent or that are already due, then those might count as permitted encumbrances. Also think about easements and surface use agreements that grant rights to other parties. Operators obviously are accustomed to working around those. They do affect title to the property, but generally those qualify as permitted encumbrances. And then you have other matters that make sense as permitted encumbrance because they are issues that will be discharged at closing. So you have liens that secure the seller's debt, where the purchase price funds will be used to pay off that debt. There can be other issues that are disclosed and are just kind of part of the deal. They're assumed as part of the bargain for the buyer. And then finally, you often see sort of a grab bag of title issues that the seller will want to include as permitted encumbrances, and the buyer will try to push back against that. So think about these. The laundry list that you often see is matters where enforcement is barred by limitations, the defects or absence of a link in the chain of title, absence of probate proceedings, failure to recite marital status, survey issues, absence of a trustee's authority, evidence of a trustee's authority or an attorney in facts authority. These are kind of grounded in, for the seller, these are kind of grounded in the theory that even good titles or relatively good titles often have some of these quirks and irregularities. For the buyer, they need to do a risk assessment and determine, are these just kind of innocuous technical defects, or are we waiving something that really could become a problem for us? A good practice for a seller is to include a disclaimer of all reps and warranties, title-related and otherwise, except for those that are expressly set forth in the PSA and the assignment at closing. Those can also include a waiver by the buyer of reliance on any statements or expressions other than what's expressly stated. The upshot of doing this is that the sole recourse for the seller sole recourse for the buyer as it relates to title issues up until closing will be the defect mechanism in the purchase and sale agreement. And then post-close, the seller will have a warranty, typically a special warranty under the conveyance. This kind of has a logical appeal. The buyer has the burden of discovering general defects during due diligence, but the buyer still retains protection against issues that arise from the seller's behavior on an after-close basis. So the next part of the paper discusses what happens when an all right title and interest grant is paired with a warranty. This combination is common, if not even industry standard. So there's the Geodyne case, which was a Texas Supreme Court case in 2005, and it clearly states that an all right title and interest grant is a quitclaim. There are other cases. Clark versus Gaunt was a Texas Supreme Court case in 1942, and then the Interlex case, an appellate case in 2009. And those expand the rule to apply even when a grant, an all right title and interest grant, is accompanied by a warranty.